fuck, it's Friday! Holy fuck, it's Friday!
It's all about the pandemics, baby.
Hello and welcome to the tech podcast that none of you motherfuckers asked for, but everybody loves. It's called Two and a Half Bens. I'm Phone Boy.
I'm Phoenix.
I'm Sir Bemrose.
Yeah, and here we are again to talk tech and whatever else falls out of our mouth. There we go.
It's been a hell of a tech week in my car. I mean, I know this isn't Tales from Rideshare, but I've had more than my fair share of computer analysts, software engineers, and the like to chew on tech with, be asked interesting questions. And I actually even had a question I asked in a work Zoom that you were doing, asked by your boss out loud. I was jitty because, of course, it was shitting on AI.
Yes. Oh my. Yeah. Well,
what we do here.
Yeah, that's one of the services we provide.
That's
AI
right.
Shitting as a service. I need to write it
Talk
down.
Talk about SaaS.
Yeah. Exactly. AI shit.
No. Fuck the AI. Just shitting as a service.
Yes.
And make sure it's the capital A double small or capital S double small A.
Yeah, I'll figure it out. I'm writing it down in my.
There's no. Any tech person out there is going to know what a capital S two small A.
Yes.
Capital S's.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Oh, my goodness. Yes, it's been that.
It's starting already.
It is. Yeah. Let's go. Let's. All right, how many, so Sir Bemrus, how many stories do you have to go into?
I have 3.5, but here's the scary thing. And to make up for last week's oversight where I didn't bring any stories shitting on AI, I've kind of got all of my stories are AI now.
Yeah.
The crossover, if it occurs, will be interesting.
Yes, exactly. I'm trying to think. I think two stories. Well, yeah, I think two stories involve AI. That might be the best way to describe them. So,
for the most part, everything that happens in tech involves AI. So, shitting on AI is a small step.
Exactly. So, all right.
Well,
I think.
Fuck. I guess all my stories are AI too.
Oh my goodness!
I just went through and looked and went, that one is.
All right, okay. No, but I will start things off tonight. I have a non AI story, so we'll
get that shit out of here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's the stolen LastPass backups that enable crypto theft through 2025. Is this? And we've done stories on this, right?
This story that keeps on giving.
Yes, it is.
It is. And wait a minute. This is, mind you, the same
breach that
project breach I covered.
Yes, exactly.
In my class.
I know. It's great. So the blockchain intelligence firm TRM Labs warns that encrypted vault backups stolen in the 2022 LastPass breach are still being cracked using weak master passwords, enabling crypto theft as late as 2025.
Are still people out there, and this doesn't surprise me in the least, who, after having had all their shit breached, still never bothered to change any passwords, not even their master. No, they're just like, oh, yeah, well, I guess it's all fine. I'm just going to keep using my stuff and pretend like none of my data's out there.
This is just like one in several, at the very least this week, that we've seen where weak passwords have led to breaches and all these things that you just don't want.
Yeah.
I don't get it. It's 2026 and we still have very important things that are being secured by a password of 1234.
Well, okay. It's $ current year and humanity is still stupid. Next story.
Fair. Fair. Yes. Fair.
Oh my goodness. So, no, of course, this is a lot of this stuff is just the hackers breached LastPass, stealing encrypted backups of roughly 30 million vaults containing sensitive credentials, including crypto keys. TRM experts pointed out that attackers would decrypt vaults with weak master passwords, creating a multi-year risk as much as we're finding out. So wallet drains continued through 2024 and 2025 with stolen funds traced through mixers to high-risk Russian exchanges. Yeah, blame the Russians, right?
TRM. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure this is all the Russians doing. Yes, not
yeah, exactly. TRM Labs found...
As we know, it's actually the Jews.
Well...
So I've heard.
Yeah. TRM Labs found
they
repeated
They do own the banks, after all.
Yeah, the repeated use of Russian Jews. There you go. Cybercrime infrastructure and continuity of wallet control, including the indicating likely Russian criminal involvement in monetizing the breach. Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. They've traced. Yeah, the TRM Labs has traced over 23 million in crypto stolen via the LastPass breach, yeah. Which is et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's been laundered and blah 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 blah.
Okay, so am I the turd in the punch bowl for pointing out if you did not, when this breach occurred, change all of your master passwords, you get what you get.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much.
I not only changed my master password, but I also put it into a different fucking program.
Well,
wild how that works, isn't it?
Yeah.
Here, I think I'm going to pull out this old chestnut here.
You are an idiot.
Don't get me wrong. LastPass is it's in the constant permanent balancing act between usability and security. LastPass. They are, as far as password managers go, pretty user friendly. They have, all kinds of cool, like a pretty nice design, really good platform compatibility, and they have some very helpful features like we'll store all of your passwords in the cloud and you can access them on any device anywhere. They definitely are swinging in the convenience direction. In fact, farther in the convenience direction than I was comfortable with, which is why I stopped using LastPass several years ago.
But I was going to say, putting your passwords in the cloud that could inevitably be hacked, what could go wrong? Your entire life owned because all your passwords are sitting in this one little tight, pretty little,
I get
package.
Why people are doing that. And, let's put aside the fact that, the ship has basically sailed. Nobody memorizes their passwords anymore. That's actually kind of a bad idea. Human wetware is not really capable of keeping a whole bunch of different strong passwords anymore. So password managers are kind of a thing now. A lot of people will move on to hardware keys, but somewhere along the line, you got to store everything somewhere. The decision that I've made is I store it locally. Now, the risk that I'm taking is if my hard drives fail, even the backups or, some catastrophe, I don't want to name things, not to put that out there. I am not really that protected if I lose all of my local storage. LastPass users are. Okay, so you're trading one threat for another. That said,
I have a question.
Okay. People who didn't change their damn passwords are fucking stupid. But
yes.
For people who continue using LastPass, I understand that.
Okay. I'm going to ask this question as a newbie to the situation and someone who's an extremely logically minded individual. What is wrong?
Sorry.
Yeah, thanks. What is literally wrong with writing your passwords down in a book and keeping it, in your desk?
Yeah. You're vulnerable to physical access, but otherwise it's pretty strong for digital.
The people who have physical access to my office are people who I allow in my office, and I know damn well who they are at pretty much all times. That's my point.
It's going to be you, phone boy, the cat, and all the federal agents that kick down your door.
Hey, come back with a warrant.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say my ex actually had a password book that she wrote things down in. I mean,
as much as I hate,
I've used a password book.
I don't think it's a. I'm sorry. I'm still old school. That I think having a physical something where I don't have to worry about somebody hacking a password site because guess what? It's not there. It's in a physical piece of book. That I have.
I switched away from a password book when I discovered that I had a severe vulnerability in the inability to read my own goddamn handwriting.
I think that's actually an affliction that once you get an IT degree of any kind, you develop. Homeboy's handwriting is atrocious.
No, my handwriting was bad before I got into IT. So what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, this is why I'm always harping on, you know, every single security thing, what you need to do. And it doesn't need to be formal and it doesn't need to be on any particular form, but you need to threat model what it is that you're, because everything that you choose for security, you're trading one threat for another, for another, for another. I use KeePass. KeePass XC is the password manager that I use. And one of the primary reasons why I chose that one is because it allows me to control my own local database. And to, you know, the database is an encrypted file that I have on my hard drive. And, and talking about old school, I rsync it to various places in order to back it up. But
our sync works, man.
And so that has, it has a couple disadvantages. It has a couple advantages. One of the advantages that it has is that I don't trust the cloud. And so I don't keep something that important in the cloud. A lot of people have more trust in the cloud than I do. They may be misguided. We can have that conversation. But, LastPass is putting forth a scenario where they say, we'll store it and it's encrypted by your master password. And we hardly ever get hacked. And, what you did your project on was one of the hardly evers.
Well, yeah, but except they had poor security practices, and honestly,
yes.
I from my perspective, because we read through all of that, and yeah, but I think it does happen, but this is where, okay, you still have to, you can't completely trust somebody else, right? I mean, there's things you should be doing. I think I know in like Bitwarden, right? You can actually go in and have it like, you know, use a number of rounds or something that make it, you know, that much harder to sort of brute force or whatever, right? And of course if you've got a weak vault password, I think you're fucked anyway, right? So if you care enough to use a password manager, whether it's you know, something that's on prem, right, or it's something that is in the cloud or whatever, or, you know, heck, it's built into, you know, there's a password manager built into the Apple, you know, the Tom Collins operating systems, right? So
yeah.
I think
all the operating systems have password managers built in, which actually have a little bit of a multi-key authenticated, like a TFA sort of thing, yeah, built in. The only problem is that you've now taken your operating system vendor and put them inside the tent of your security trust, which is that's not a compromise I'm willing to make.
Yeah. Well, it makes nothing but sense, but I mean, however you do it, right? If you're actually, whatever thing you're doing, know enough about it to make sure that you're not screwing yourself, right? Then that means, you know, yeah, maybe taking, periodic backups or whatever, right? And, or, you know, it's
and,
yeah.
And you realize that with that line, you've just pretty much taken our, you know, every single person out there except for the Bens and said, yeah, screw you. You're too stupid to use passwords.
Yeah. Well,
nobody wants to know how their passwords work.
No, but if you're going to use a password manager, at least take the, take a moment and, you know, make sure you're doing everything that you're doing, right? It's not, I don't think it's that difficult, right? But it is
solid advice. I totally agree. I endorse it, and nobody's going to follow it.
We've been screaming at clouds for how long, Ryan?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that works.
Remember, there is no cloud. There's only someone else's computer.
Yeah, pretty much.
I scream at those two.
Well, yeah, we do. That's what this show is. Skull 2 and
no, in the Pacific. Wasn't that formerly known as ATN?
In the Pacific Northwest, I also scream at clouds, though.
Yeah, because you have so many of them. I mean,
sometimes it's the only things he gets to talk to when he's working.
Well, then that and the cats.
Yeah.
I mean, there is.
Although the cats get tired of my bullshit pretty quickly.
I can't imagine mine when you pee on them and use them as a. Anyway, that's another show.
Oh, my. All right. Can somebody save me with another tech story, please?
I volunteer Raya's tribute.
All right. This one comes from Bleeping Computer, and I have it listed as the beginning of the end for AI question mark, which, you know, putting a question mark in your headlines always invokes Betteridge's law. I'll let you look that up on your own if you want. Microsoft is allowing system admins to uninstall Copilot is the headline, at least the Bleeping Computer one. The top line of the Bleeping Computer article says Microsoft is testing a new policy that allows IT administrators to uninstall the AI-powered Copilot digital assistant on managed devices. That's not totally true, but you have to actually read the article past the first paragraph to really get what's going on.
Would they just disable the UI for it?
No, that's actually been possible for a while. There has been a registry hack that you could use that removes it from the taskbar, but it's still tracking everything you do and listening to what you're saying and everything. Yeah. I mean, you remember a year and a half ago, there was something called Microsoft Recall that they kind of brought out. We're like, hey, look, we're just going to go ahead and store everything you've ever done on your computer and upload it to the cloud so that you can get it back anytime you want. And so can we. And everybody freaked out, and so they kind of quietly shelved it. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
That not part of this story, but they are bringing back bits of that in Copilot as you go. So here's what's actually going on. Microsoft released a blog post today that described, you know, okay, here's what you can do. Again, this was led on, and even I was brought in by the big headline that said Microsoft is letting you uninstall Copilot, which, by the way, if that taking that alone, if that were true, would mean, oh, my God, the beginning of the end. Microsoft is starting to finally acknowledge that there are a lot of people out there who are pretty fucking sick of this AI bullshit that's being jammed down everyone's throats. How weird would it be for a Silicon Valley company to suddenly go, oh, wait, our users don't like the shit we're shoveling? But that's not what's happening.
No.
This policy is, first of all, only being offered to IT administrators who are administering group licenses, which generally means the Microsoft 365 system, enterprises, stuff like that. Everything I'm about to say only applies to the enterprise pro and educational SKUs because fuck home users. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly.
What you can do is you can set in the group policy, by the way, group policy, very, very useful device for managing a Windows computer, which is why they don't even give it to home users because fuck home users. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The group policy is called Remove Microsoft Copilot App. And what it will do is it will cause the consumer version of Microsoft Copilot to uninstall under the following three conditions. First, if it wasn't installed by the user, which means that it came in via Windows Update or through any of the 12 automatic channels that Microsoft uses to shovel anusware onto your system. It hasn't been launched in the last 28 days, so God help you if you accidentally clicked the fucking taskbar icon they put on there. Also, both the consumer and the Microsoft 365 versions of Copilot are both installed. I did not know until today that there are two different versions of Copilot. The one is the enterprise managed one, which I guess reports everything that you do on your system to your system admin. And the other is the consumer one, which reports everything you do on your system to Microsoft.
And
I guess that's the difference.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
I would say the system admin on my system already knows what the fuck I'm up to.
So if all of those things are true, you have both versions of Copilot installed and you set this and you haven't accidentally clicked the taskbar button that launches the consumer version, then it will once cause the consumer version of Copilot to become uninstalled until the next Windows update or whatever else automatically pushes it back on there. They don't really specify that, but it will clear the registry key from the group policy once you do that, so that just in case somebody who is being managed by their IT service with and has the 365 Copilot installed happens to want both of them on, It clears the key that says to uninstall it so that you can reinstall both manually if you really desire, because, hey, they really, really think that users want their shit.
And we know better. I mean, so. Yeah, actually, because it was funny because I have a Windows machine up here in the studio that one of these little Nooks that you can buy on Amazon for, you know, a couple hundred bucks or something. And I use it to run some software for work, and it went through an upgrade. I had to do the upgrade to 25H2, right?
You know, with two D's.
Yeah, with two D's for a double dose of malware. You know, it is apps. Yeah. So, and I saw the AI Copilot thing. I actually went to the taskbar and said, "Unpin this from taskbar." No, I'm never going to click on that button. I don't want to see it.
Pretty much the best you can do most of the time.
Yes. I just don't trigger me by simply being there. You know. Yes, but you know, that's how you get away. That's how you keep that stuff out of your mind, is you get rid of it. You know.
So. Yes. Yes. And never mind that it's still got processes in the background which are recording everything you do and tracking what you do and making sure to pay attention to every app that you ever launch. And by the way, eating up memory and CPU, and it's not actually eating that much hard drive space because it's not storing most of this locally. It's uploading all of it to Microsoft, which helpfully stores it in the cloud for you, just in case you ever decide you want to turn it back on and see all of the data that you've been working with for the last several months.
Of course, because it's still just because they remove the front end of it doesn't mean that they remove the back end that's actually still collecting all the data. Right?
And I don't have any confirmation that they're doing it, but it would be silly to assume they're not.
Yeah, well, yes, it's bad when you don't trust your own operating your vendor of your own operating system.
There's a reason I don't run that operating system. I'm saying I use Arch Linux.
Yes. Yes.
To Linux users, that's a douchebag thing to say, but it is true.
Okay, well, yeah, it's like running Gentoo back in the day.
Yeah.
and meanwhile, Phoenix is over here going, what the hell are you people talking about?
Are you talking?
Yeah, exactly.
not that you can tell.
No, I really was just hearing the Peanuts teacher. Won't. It's okay.
Okay, well, I think we're handing the talking stick to you now, because I assume you have a story to...
See, this is the punishment I get for mocking the two Bens. Now I actually have to do some damn work over here.
So...
Such a travesty to have to do so. But, hey, I guess it comes with the territory, because the first thing I'm going to bring to you all, if my desktop will stop fritzing out... is the downside to using AI for all those boring tasks at work. Companies are discovering that productivity gains come with an unexpected cost. Who didn't know that?
From the no shit department.
Yeah, from the no shit department in a big way. Because they're bitching about how, you know, work days without busy worker closer to reality than ever, thanks to artificial intelligence. And then they go on to fap about all the things that AI can do to save you time. But yeah, the catch is that our brains aren't capable of thinking big thoughts nonstop. Well, no shit. So they're asking if we're risking forfeiting the epiphanies that sometimes spring to mind while doing easy, repetitive job functions. I would say yes. I've had this argument for time immemorium since I got into this course of study, and AI became this prominent thing because more and more studies are coming out talking about how when you just let AI do your work, you're completely stupefying. You can't remember the work because you didn't do it. You can't quote it because you didn't write it. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, now I'm gonna go down a different route here. So the fact that you use the AI to help with the environmental sciences stuff,
because I didn't give a damn about the environmental science stuff.
but it served as an antidote to keep your brain from actually like having to absorb that shit.
Yes, because I knew all of it was absolutely garbage. It's like Greta Thunberg rubbed her dirty cooch all over my book. and it came out in words of bullshit about how we're all going to die and stop eating cows.
I'm grossed out.
I want to back up to
something you said just a moment ago, just because it's something that I hadn't really thought about, and I want to try to wrap my brain around it, was the busy work argument. And, you know, thinking, yes, humans crave routine. That is just something that, you know, that too much routine means being stuck in a rut, which can really fuck up your life. But it didn't really occur to me that, trying to work with AI as your primary job, can you fall into a routine or not? You know, having worked on software way back in the day, long before AI was the thing that people tried to use to replace human brains, every interesting problem that I had was brand new, because if the problem's already solved, someone wrote software for it, and then it's just software that's running. But there was still some routine, like, filing bug reports, like reading through the incessant amount of emails and so on. So, you know, you'd spend an hour and a half at the beginning of your day just going over the ridiculous number of emails that can come in a corporate setting, and then trying to figure out which ones need to be. But once I got through that, a good day was one in which I worked on different problems every day. And I guess, yeah, I felt kind of exhausted at the end of that day. Can you even feel that with AI?
I would argue to say I don't think you can, because
is it exhausting just trying to convince the fucking AI to do what you want?
I mean, depending on which one you're using and the retarded slop that it's been trained on. But isn't that okay? So let's double click on that, because I think that could be leading to why people aren't sleeping the way that they should be. And I'm not trying to go down a Lotus Effect rabbit hole, but think about the fact that if you're not using as much mental capacity because you've offloaded your mindless, you know, boring, monotonous tasks to an AI, what is your brain doing while that AI is doing the monotonous task?
That's easy. Porn on the second monitor.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, if you can get past their, if you're smart enough to get past their, content filtering that they do, right? So,
but I mean,
or you have it on your phone, which is probably
yeah,
what
or
most
you
would do.
You bring in a tablet,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, with a 5G connection, and the internet is for porn. You know?
Oh my god! So all jokes aside, I completely was watching a compilation video. I think it was even a Daz video, possibly. Not a joke. This teacher was going off on this teen. Are y'all ready for this? It's so good. I'm not sure like what grade. Losing his shit because she caught him watching porn at school. How ballsy do you have to be to go at the student? First of all, telling her
boring is that curriculum?
I mean, no doubt. But seriously, how brazen to look at a student and go ahead and tell. Nobody's going to believe you. And it's on camera. I hope this guy got fired with prejudice. I just want to point that out. But circling back to what we were talking about before that, we took that.
I hadn't gotten my thought out about that, which is actually one of the benefits I see of repetitive, boring tasks is they can kind of be a little bit, if you're doing them presently, they're kind of meditative. And so it's actually good for the soul to do something that's a little bit repetitive, and it's, you know, I find that even just like doing the dishes and all of that can do it. But in an office environment, you can find some of those boring tasks. Yeah. You kind of get into a rhythm, and then the time just kind of disappears and you feel good about it. Right. So I think that, you know, so the fact that they've taken that, you know, they're taking that away by feeding things to AI. Yeah. They're fucking the humans. What else is new?
This is not a newsflash, I can assure you. So in the article, there is a well-to-do man, the chief executive for Aflac, Dan Amos.
Aflac.
Yes, the duck. So he actually talks about...
I literally just ducked when you said that.
He talks about how he sends handwritten notes to employees who receive bonuses or retire. you know, often following a familiar script, but never taking a shortcut past paper and ink. I respect that in a big way. He also values the fact that, you know, there are commercials in... He refused to pay a few extra bucks for ad-free versions of a streaming, you know, of a streaming service, because he said commercials offer a moment to think about what you just watched, grab a snack from the fridge, or let the dog out. It's a little bit of lull time.
And yeah, I think this is a person whose brain is trained on garbage. Sorry.
Well, but I think he has a good point in that lull time is really important. It's not being lazy. It's giving your brain a moment to stop and download all, you know, sync all the shit that you've taken in so far in the day without other input trying to jam its way in.
You know, for not wanting to sound like we're doing the Lotus Effect, which we, by the way, we've moved to Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern for the live stream.
The same time as this show.
Yeah, the same time as this show, except 24 hours away or something. Yeah. Anyway, it is,
it's going to facilitate more things, including actually not only having a photograph of what Phoenix is cooking, but an actual video of the shop and preparation in the show notes for
the same day.
So we're moving all of the show content to right during my dinner prep instead of right before it. I like it.
Well, I figured you could maybe tune into a live video, you know, and that way you'd know what to make for dinner.
You're doing video?
Yeah, I've got to go.
I've never tuned into your video stream.
I haven't put the first one up.
Tomorrow's the first one that's being done.
I'm actually.
Oh, shiny. Okay.
Yeah. Because
you know that I'm quite triggered by ads. I have to back up at this full statement about, oh well, ads are good because they let you stop and reflect on what you just. Well, you know what else works really well to let you reflect on what you see on some video stream? Shutting the fucking stream off. Go out and touch grass for a few minutes.
Yes.
That's way better than getting fucking propaganda piped into your brain. You're not reflecting. You're not tuning out. If you have ads being piped into your brain, all that's happening is they're switching one dopamine channel for another and completely scrambling your brain with somebody else's corporate message.
Okay,
but no, ads are not the right way to do that.
But I don't think that's what he was saying, though. I don't think he's actually not paying for ad-free because he's watching the ads. He's literally using the ads as a metaphorical pause button
back in the day when we were watching television and
Woolery back in Two and Two. Yeah. Right, take a pee because it took 2 minutes to piss.
Yeah, it's all right. So that's
And if you're using it like we grew up, you know, when we grew up with there were 12 channels and that was it. If you were lucky, if you were in a really big city, you got 12 channels. Otherwise, it was
you get like four.
Yeah. And you got to watch whatever the hell they wanted. And as soon as they decided that there was a break, they would, you know, crank the volume up by 15 decibels and start piping ads in. And if you did what every one of us when in the 80s and early 90s learned how to do, where you just mute that bullshit, get up and walk away. Yes, that is the healthy response because you're taking a break and you're not watching the ads. I don't think most people... You know, for one thing, if you're on a streaming platform today, your shit knows if you're sitting there staring at it, and your shit knows if you're hearing the ads and watching the ads. And therefore, if you pause and walk away and you come back, it's just going to continue the fucking ad where it was. It's like, no, you're getting this propaganda in your brain.
No. I'm not saying actually physically pause. I'm saying I think he was using it as a metaphorical pause so that he didn't have to pause his content.
Yeah.
I think it takes a lot more discipline than most people have to do that.
But we had that discipline because that's how we grew up. And yeah, and actually, it's funny. Exactly. Actually, funny you talk about streaming platforms. So every once in a while, we will.
We had three bathrooms in our house because and every single one of them got used. I was always the one sprinting up the stairs to the master bathroom because I was told I couldn't use the near one.
Yes, because you have more spunk.
Yeah. Younger legs.
Yes, exactly. So that's how that works. But
yeah, I believe the comment is I'm on my last, you're on your first type thing.
Something along those lines. Now I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. If it's important, it'll come back around, as they say. But
well, the basic thing that they start, by the way, this was a Wall Street Journal article, just to point out. They go on right after talking about how a little bit of, you know, lull time is good. Right into how basically in most companies in 26, you know, the scary words of layoffs and AI efficiencies, you know, is sending this strong message, basically like, no downtime for you. You must give us every drip drop of your time from the time you punch in slave until the time you punch out. Even if
in fairness, that's not new.
It's not new, but there's workers, busy if AI's not running your monotonous tasks.
Workers in the steel mills were dealing with that back in the 1880s. I mean, companies always hate the idea that human beings might spend even 30 seconds not being totally productive. And you're absolutely right that the human nature is productivity comes in bursts and you've got to stop and regroup a moment. And companies have always hated that. They want something that's going to go for the entire time you're clocked in, no questions asked.
That's just the rest of society too, by the way.
Right, but here's my thought on that. If you look at AI as a machine, because it is, okay, inevitably the harder and more strain you put on a machine for longer, eventually that machine breaks down. I mean, granted, we're praying for the burst.
Goes rogue, as we're hearing.
Yeah, people be like that too. Yeah.
I understand people be like that too, but companies don't look at people the same way they look at machines, obviously. They look at people as a liability in 2026. They're trying to replace
They put security gates and guards who try to keep you from bringing the AK into the office because they pushed you too hard.
Okay. All right. So, funny side digression story that reminds me of the fact Phoneboy and I were talking behind the mic in the last couple of days about these signs like, you know, no gun-free zone or whatever. First of all, if people with no nefarious intentions are entering that zone, then what does it matter if they have a gun? On the flip side of which, if you have a gun and you're about to fuck some shit up, you think that sign is going to stop you? Do you think a bank robber is going to walk up to the fucking door of the bank and look and go, well, shit, Daryl, we can't rob this bank. There's no guns allowed inside.
No.
No.
You're absolutely right, which is why anybody with half a brain who gets it in their head that they want to go shoot a bunch of people will go somewhere like a school, because they know gun-free zone means soft targets and nobody's shooting back.
And that's why I fully support arming teachers.
Yeah, I support arming the students too, but I can see where there could be some logistical problems.
I was going to say, I got two words for you, Dylan Klebold.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, well, if all the students are armed, they're not going to get too many, are they?
Well, that ties into the other argument that I've always had about people who are like, oh, we need stricter gun laws, and oh, why do you need to bring the gun to the grocery store? Have you been to Walmart lately, lady? When the shit pops off, I'm the one you're going to be hiding behind going, save me, save me. When 5 minutes ago, you were looking at me going, I don't understand why you need that gun. You're grocery shopping. Because it's my God-given right, bitch. That's why.
Yeah.
And because when the shit goes down, I'm the one that's got a grouping this fucking tight from 25 yards. You want to argue? I don't think so.
Is Phoneboy going to confirm that you're that tight?
I need to bring him to the gun range so bad.
Anyway.
You're a sick man. I did not allow that feeding.
Well done.
You've been rejected, sir.
Well done.
Can we put this train back on the track, you degenerates?
Okay,
TLDR basically talking about that. Finally, if you will, someone who's trying to pull it back from the brink and basically say, by using AI for the menial tasks, you are truly dumbing yourself down. You are truly not saving time. Well, you might be saving physical time, like on the clock.
I don't think you are.
But mentally, you're not. This is why people are burning out so fast. We're going to see it. I'm going to say in the next 5 years, we see a massive increase in the IT burnout rate.
You know, maybe if the Silicon Valley burns out their workers using AI at an accelerated rate and they manage to completely just ruin the entire, all of their current employees, they might be forced to start hiring white men again.
It could happen.
They might even have to hire Americans, although, you know, not if they can help it.
Well, moreover, they might actually have to hire humans again. And the funny part of which is, and I know the track you're going down, Sir Vemros, and I don't disagree with you. When this does happen, I'm going to not say if, but when this does happen, old guys like you who have all of this knowledge and are real damn good at what you do, y'all are going to be a premium price. You're not going to come cheap for these companies at all.
Yeah, I'm sure those old COBOL programmers make good bank when they have to do something.
Yeah, I learned COBOL in college and was graduating college right about the time of, right in 2000. Unfortunately, I was about a year late, but I actually entertained the idea of taking a year off of college and going out just because I learned COBOL in college. I'm like, I can do this. I could go and spend a year trying to consult. Eventually, I ended up staying in college, but I was just thinking, you know, why do people have to be old to know COBOL?
Because the only people who run COBOL is the government right now?
Well, here's the problem. I had a computer science degree that was teaching me modern languages like C++, but I was also working in a mathematics program.
Yeah, which I know that. I did the same thing.
The math program requires you to learn a programming language, and then they show a list of, here's all the programming languages that our long-beard math professors think that you should use for a mathematics study. And then, you know, the list was COBOL and Fortran. I'm not kidding.
That's it.
The language, I took a class. The language we were forced to learn was called, literally the name of the language is Fortran 77. And that 77 is not a version number. That is the year that that language came to rise.
I believe
that's
it.
Also the year that so did I. I came out of my mom in 77. We didn't even get to use the more modern Fortran 90, which was by then like 8 years old.
When I did, I forget whatever class it was. That was Fortran 90. And actually one of my professors wrote one of these little green books that had all the stuff that you needed to know to actually to do it. So,
the first thing you need to know is work in something more modern.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I got exposed to a lot of programming languages. There was one class I took at White Privilege University with the very Jesuit who wrote that little book on Fortran. He taught a class. It was 10 programming languages in 10 weeks. Now, okay. We didn't go deep in any of these programming languages, but and I also did like assembly and Prolog and you know, Lisp and garbage languages. And I've seen,
you know, the funny thing is I have done that on my own. I never did it as part of a course.
Yeah.
I think when I was in college, it would have broken my brain.
Well, yeah, it didn't break my brain. I was hacking my BBS software when I was like 14. So, yeah.
Well, the simple fact is once learning your first programming language is really hard. Learning your second programming language is also hard. Learning your third, you start to make connections and make a distinction between the concepts and the vocabulary. Learning your 10th programming language is like, just show me a reference and I'll just apply whatever syntax is needed.
Yeah, look at the sample code, maybe look a couple things up, you can figure it out.
Yeah, right? Which line do the curly braces go on? Okay, I've got this. Yeah. That was actually my line when I was learning Python, and I got the dirtiest looks. It was awesome.
I'm not even going to say about how stupid it is when you have zero computer anything knowledge and you decide, oh, I'm going to make Java my first language, but not only am I going to make it my first language, I'm going to take an accelerated 5-week course.
So you got to start somewhere. And Java is a great language for the kind of people who will read an entire novel in 3 hours. Because that's kind of what...
How about you run JavaScript in my left nut?
I hate kind,
you know, Java in particular is one of the most verbose languages out there these days.
It just didn't go well. It was so... I mean, seriously, to know Java and then think... Well, for you, it might be hard because you've pretty much always been in a computer since you were really young. Phone boy, the same.
When I played with Java...
Yeah, when I was doing Java in 97, because I think I was, or 97, 98, because, and it was when I was working at Netscape, I got bought a Java book because that was the hot thing back in the day. I wrote some simple stuff, and it was complicated as fuck to do anything. Like, I looked at this, I'm going, this is complete horseshit. Why would anybody want to use this language?
But that's what I'm saying. To choose Java as your first language ever to look at, comprehend, code, anything, you got to be a special kind of touched.
Yeah, the first language I learned was this thing called Logo, where you take a little turtle, you know, move it across the screen, right? You get the, you know, you get all basic concepts, and you can see what it does, right? That you're moving the turtle around, you're making some sort of a shape or something.
But here's the thing, Serb Emerald is the first person who really explained it. It's a weed out course.
Oh, absolutely.
That's exactly what Java is a weed
out
course.
And it's kinder than the weed out courses that I got when I was in college, because that one, they showed you how to build a disk driver in C in a 101 level course.
That's pretty intense.
it was probably 2/3 of the way through that course, but they actually... It was a file system that you had to put on a floppy disk. You had to open. It was all in Unix, and you had to open the physical hardware device and write and read only directly to that, and effectively write a disk driver.
Damn.
But anyway, yeah, that was a weed out course.
Big time.
You had to do it in C.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Java at least provides some level of memory safety and garbage collection. No, you're talking bare metal.
Gives you every, it's like the assembler of actual like programming languages.
Okay, I did learn assembly too back in the day.
Yeah, so did I.
I am going to say though, HTML, CSS, when it starts getting really deep into divs and containers and shit, I'm out.
Yeah,
I will say... You were saying that, you know, somebody who knows a lot of languages can't really relate to learning new ones.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant you had early experience with computers. To you, taking Java as a first language would probably be like learning English. Like, oh, this is simple.
Trust me, I had the same recoil in horror that you did when I was first learning how to do Java. I was able to compare it to other languages at the time.
And that's fair.
No, what I was going to say, though, is I was going to relate it, though, to learning a new spoken language, which is a very, very similar mental process and something I've never been able to do. I can barely speak English. I can't speak any other languages, but I've tried.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting because that's one of the easiest things that I have found. I can much easier learn new words, remember them by sight, even in Hebrew, than I can to fuck with Java.
Yeah. I have, by the way, Sir Bemrose, same thing, because I took Japanese in high school, and I do remember some phrases and things, but don't.
Same thing here. I still know how to thank somebody or say, you know, don't touch my mustache. I think that's thank you.
Yeah. Such a useful phrase.
I think it means you're well. It actually means you're welcome. By the way, I think it's
whatever. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, don't touch my
mustache. Ohio gozaimasu.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of about 4 things I remember from my high school Japanese courses.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I took 4 years of it, and like I said, it gave me an appreciation for the culture over there. But yeah, for whatever reason, then I've struggled to learn languages too. But that's something, you know, I think that's one of those things that time will come.
At least I'll have the advantage if you upset me, I can cuss at you in Hebrew, and you won't know what the hell I'm saying.
Sorry.
I know it's not my turn, but I was wondering if I could drop in. I got something that is very related to the AI replacing people, replacing employees with employees who use AI.
Okay.
Oh, well, yeah, go ahead, please.
I can hold off, but
I actually want to hear this, and I think it's a good companion to the one I just brought. Please.
So here, I dropped this one in with a headline of AI is training to emulate the shittiest employees. And I'm going to do something.
I think we pulled the same story.
Oh.
Great mind, okay. Dude.
I was just going to read out of the story because I fucking loved it. This was actually kind of a blog post. But
actually,
one of the paragraphs.
They may be adjacent because they both came out of IEEE Spectrum. They may not be the same, though. So go ahead.
Okay. Okay. So this is a guy who's talking about he is a CEO of some startup, which I guess he thinks that makes me respect him more or something. No. But who had already made the jump from just using human powered coding to vibe coding everything. And I'm just going to pull one paragraph. He says, recently released LLMs such as GPT-5 have a much more insidious method of failure. He was talking about early versions of the AI when he was vibe coding. They would do a bunch of stupid stuff like completely miss curly braces or semicolons or just screw up the syntax so that when you tried to vibe code something, it would give you code and then you tried to run the code and it just blow up because the syntax was all wrong. And he says, recently released LLMs such as GPT-5 have much more insidious methods of failure. They often generate code that fails to perform as intended, but which on the surface seems to run successfully, avoiding syntax errors or obvious crashes. It does this by removing safety checks or by creating fake output that matches the desired format or through a variety of other techniques to avoid crashing during execution.
Yeah, so you're literally switching safety for functionality.
So it is what it is. Is it, you ever get that one person who is trying? You know, you say, okay, we're going to test you on this at the end, and so it's the he's talking about the AI like it's the person who brings a cheat sheet in to the test so that you can write down the answers without ever learning anything, and of course we know AI can't learn or reason. But apparently these systems are developing the ability to cheat the test, which the test is does my code compile? Okay, now run it. And the problem is that he's talking about getting code that is actually passing all the unit tests because that's what the AI is. The AI is being told, write some code that passes the unit tests. He's not making it write code that does what our product is supposed to do. He's saying, make it write code that passes the unit tests. So the AI is passing the unit tests and then he's deploying it to production. And then it's okay. So again, I'm going to read straight from this because this is fascinating. He says, I've noticed this problem anecdotally over a few months, but recently I ran a simple yet systemic test to determine if it's truly getting worse. I wrote some Python code, which loaded a data frame and then looked for a non-existent column. And he shows the code. The error ultimately in the code is that it is trying to index a column in a database that isn't there. He says, obviously, this code would never run successfully. Python generates an easy-to-understand error message, which explains that the column cannot be found. Any human seeing this message would inspect the data and notice that the column was missing. I sent this error message to 9 different versions of ChatGPT, primarily variations on GPT-4 and 5. I asked each of them to fix the error, specifying that I wanted completed code only without commentary. This is, of course, an impossible task. The problem is the missing data, not the code. So the best answer would be either an outright refusal or failing that code that would help me debug the problem. I ran 10 trials for each model and classified the output as helpful, useless, or counterproductive. GPT-4 gave a useful answer every one of the 10 times that I ran it. In 3 cases, it ignored my instructions to return only code and explained that the column was likely missing from my data set and that I would have to address it there. In 6 of the cases, it tried to execute the code but added an exception that would either throw up an error or fill the new column with an error message if the column couldn't be found. GPT 4.1 had an even better solution. For 9 of the cases, it simply printed the list of columns in the data frame and included a comment in the code suggesting that I check that the column was present and fix the issue if it wasn't. GPT 5 found a solution that worked every time. It took the actual index of each row, not the name of the row, but the numeric index, and then added 1 into it in order to create a new column. This is the worst possible outcome. The code executes successfully, and at first glance seems to be doing the right thing, but the resulting value is essentially a random number. In a real-world example, this would create a much larger headache downstream in the code. Also creating, just to comment, it would create security holes. It would create crashes in your database. Yeah, okay. I wondered if this, he goes on and describes other versions. And basically, the later versions of ChatGPT were erring on the side of trying to do what he wanted so much that it would fake output, it would fake the data, it would hard code data that it would return from a column it couldn't find. It would create this entire fiction in the code to make up for the idea of, well, you know, the person said that the column should be there and I can't find the column. So let's do everything we can to try to make my person happy. And it was creating pathological bugs that will translate into CVEs later if he does deploy it.
Well, we know that, though, that the GPTs and basically all of the LLM interactives are coded specifically to be user pleasers.
Yes, they are trying as hard as they can to please the user, even when the user doesn't have a freaking idea what the hell they want.
Yeah, and by the way, it is the exact same story I was literally reading along with you. I love the fact we both pulled that one because I looked at that and went, oh, this has got to go in. But see, that's the problem, okay, is that because at all costs, we must keep the user using, keep them engaged. The quality, as he says in the article, garbage in, garbage out. That says it right there. Because these people have no idea what they're doing. You know, $80 million company just sold on a vibe coder. Right. What happens when that code shits all over itself? And I even made the point,
this company's not worth $80 million anymore.
Ain't that the truth? I made the point to Phone Boy, and I think it's really valid, is that when you use AI to code, good luck bug fixing it.
Yeah.
And which makes it mind-blowing to me that there are certain companies out there that are wanting to allow AI to write certain codes, like extensive core function shite. And I'm just...
I made this comment, by the way. In fact, when Adam Curry was in his podcasting 2.0 vibe coding phase, where he had something which he personally admitted would have, if he had just engaged Dave Jones, who is the much more technical half of the podcasting 2.0 space, if he had just engaged Dave, he says they probably would have had this knocked out in a day and a half early on. But he wanted to vibe code, and so it took 8 months and probably $5,000 or $6,000 in AI credits in order to vibe code this project that he was doing.
And I don't understand. He has the knowledge to code it. Why?
Adam absolutely does not believe that he's technical, which is bullshit. He has the vocabulary.
He created podcasting. How?
Yeah.
How are you not technical?
What he's not is a coder. Because he has got it in his head that he is not a coder and therefore has chosen not to learn the vocabulary of any particular programming language. But he understands how to code because the most important parts of coding is not the vocabulary of the language. That's the part that's interchangeable. That's why an experienced coder who knows 10 languages can pick up their 11th really quickly, because the vocabulary is the least important part. It's difficult to get your head in the brain space of a vocabulary when it's your first language. And I get that's hard. I went through that. But the things that make you a really good coder or programmer is the ability to organize your thoughts in terms of how do I want information, data, and control to flow through my program. And that is something that is very difficult to teach. And once you've got it, it doesn't matter what language you're in. That's what makes the good coders good. And Adam has that. He just doesn't think he's a good coder. But he went through this project where he tried to vibe code this, and it took months and months. And the thing, I mean, listening to the last 6 months of Podcasting 2.0, where he describes his errors with it, was fascinating to me. I learned more about vibe coding from that than I ever did from attempting to do it myself.
Yeah, well, you can point and laugh.
The comment that I made on one of those shows, and I think is still appropriate, is vibe coding may well make the project the process of writing the code easier. I am personally of the opinion that the writing the code is the easy part. It takes 30% of the effort and energy and time of building a solid piece of software is writing all of it. And the rest is debugging. And vibe debugging is a goddamn nightmare, no matter what you do, because you are now going into the debugging process, which is already the hard part of software generation. And you're going in without having gone through the process of understanding what the hell you're doing.
You don't know how to figure out that one missing fucking comma, colon, yeah, curly brace, etc.
Yeah, when you go into the system and you know how it's supposed to work, and you know because you've written the code, then debugging can still be a pain in the butt, but at least you're like, oh, it's doing this. I know that the flow is supposed to go through here. Let me check this code, and you've got a pretty good idea. When you're going in and AI did all of that, you don't have a goddamn clue. You're starting from zero. It's like bringing an intern in to debug the code.
Yeah, because a 3-hour debug just for grabbing a number out of the air then turns into like a 3-day debug or worse.
And I will tell you one line that jumped out at me from this Spectrum article was when he pointed out the switch to vibe coding. He said a project that by hand would have taken 10 hours. When I first started vibe coding, it was taking 5. Now, maybe he's beating the curve, but that has not been what I've heard. I've heard that there was generally not any real difference. Maybe he's doing really well. But he said, moving to more modern models, now the process that took 5 hours with ChatGPT-4 is taking 7 hours with ChatGPT-5 and 8 hours with the newest one. Because
yeah, I saw that.
They're getting worse. For something that would take a normal human 10 hours. What are you saving?
That's exactly the point. Because they think that they're saving all this time by having you use AI to vibe code and this and that. But then when it goes wrong, you're spending 2 to 3 times more that you're wasting your resources that have to sit there and go line by line by line, trying to figure out what kind of bullshit in the most... That is the thing I hate the most, is when I have to try to figure out why won't this damn code compile.
Yeah, or why it is not doing what you think it should be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, compiling is the first major hurdle, and it is a major hurdle in some cases, but there are so many other ones past that. Like,
yes, but remember, like, you're talking like to why, a very young... Yeah. Remember, that's why I'm...
Oh, I understand. I'm just saying that once you get over, you know, it is a big accomplishment getting over that and getting your code to compile, and then you realize that, that was the first dune in a very large desert.
At some point you're out of water.
Yeah. At some point you're sitting here going, why, you know, you start out going, why won't it compile? And then you're like, why is it crashing on launch? And then a little while later, you're like, why is it leaking user data to the dark web? We might want to get Phoneboy to do a story, because he's now posting pics of his pussy in chat.
Yeah, our pussy.
Yeah. I thank you very much. That's my pussy.
All right. Anyway, This is all right. So this definitely skates into day job territory. It's this holiday. This is a Reddit post. I don't know. You found this? Somebody actually. I found this. This came up internally. This holiday, it is time to acknowledge fraud at Palo Alto Networks. And so there's a very
Gambling going on.
There's gambling going on. Well, this the stuff that's accused in here. And so this is now. I did a little bit of research on the forum that this is the Palo Alto Networks forum on Reddit, which is run by somebody who seems to have no issue, putting things up that people are, they're sharing their candid experiences with Palo Alto Networks. Right. So I'm going to read this as is because I think it'll. I was trying to edit this down and I went, no, I need to read this as is because this is too good. And anyway, so 2025 has been quite memorable as a Palo Alto Networks employee. So this was written allegedly by an employee. As a veteran insider, I can confidently say that our customers receiving technical support are receiving a support product that is nothing short of fraudulent. 4 months ago on this subreddit, almost 100 customers and/or employees voiced their concern about the pathetic state of support. Now, before I begin, let's remind ourselves what we're talking about here, what they call Global Customer Support, i.e. TAC, or the Technical Assistance Center. They're responsible for technical support. Now, customers are spending millions annually on a product that is the most sensitive piece of equipment for any corporation or government on the planet. Well, why is it so insecure? But anyway, the network and outages and security events have caused historical levels of damage to companies and governments across the world. When receiving support for any piece of equipment, the minimal expectation is to have the ability to speak to someone who is knowledgeable about the product. This is ideal for something trivial like an Xbox. However, for an enterprise-level firewall and EDR, this is an absolute must at the first stages during an outage or security event. So the person on the other end of the line at the very beginning must understand A, networking, B, sysadmin, and C, components of the product. Networking and system administration take years to become competent. There would be no computer science majors if this were not the case. Understanding the products and the various hardware and software components can take many months to be fully able to comprehend for some advanced features, and this can take even longer. Now, knowledge learned in universities cannot be understood in a matter of weeks. Now, so when requesting support for a product that is costing you millions annually, right, the bare minimum, it would be speaking to someone who's an expert in networking and system administration. After all, the TAC individual will be expected to be the technical expert for network and security experts from every possible company and government who are our customers. And any delay or mistake can cost executives their careers. Inadequacy is not acceptable. This is not Xbox technical support. This is Palo Alto Networks. Okay, well. Anyway, I think I'll stop for just a second here.
I'd like to speak to your AI.
Yeah, exactly. how is that going to go? So let me paint a current picture of your average support experience as a PAN customer. The average engineer across many of the outsourced call centers have had mere weeks of technical training. They are thrown into 3 or 4 week boot camps and are expected to take any technical case that gets thrown their way. They are paid cents on the dollar. Don't take my word for it. Check the previous post on this very subreddit if you do not believe me. This is not any exaggeration, nor is it an isolated area or team. This is 90% of the current support experience. The number will only become higher. Any American badged engineers who have recently left a lot are being replaced by inadequate engineers from the other side of the globe. Well, the case is twofold.
Now, there is gambling going on here.
Oh, it gets better. This is where the money shots start coming.
The money shirt.
That's great. I'm writing it down. So I need to write down the money shirt. Jesus Christ.
You're the one who said it, man.
I know. The cause is twofold, arrogance and ignorance. 1 year ago, TAC management was so confident in AI, here it is, they proclaimed that AI would even start to solve escalated technical support cases that were already worked on by a human engineer. Wow, they drank the Kool-Aid, didn't they?
AI can't even solve AI.
Yeah, exactly. This began the beginning of a continual decrease in skilled firewall engineers, annually getting worse every subsequent year under Nikesh Arora and BJ Jenkins. Hiring of American TAC engineers has slowed to a halt. Palo Alto networks is abandoning hiring American engineers in favor of hiring in other countries because they're cheaper. The percentage of American employees has decreased every year. Management is entirely dependent on the two AIs, artificial intelligence and actually Indians. Leaders believe that skilled ICs are no longer needed. Having leverage over someone in a third world country whose soul you own and costs you cents on the dollar is infinitely greater than having a skilled customer support experience.
And let us not forget briefly that the H-1B program under which most of these foreigners are imported to work in America is literally indentured servitude.
Yeah.
And because you can't quit. You can't shop around and go to another company. If you ever stop working for the company who brought you over, they deport your ass. So you're pretty much, you are brought into the United States to work for the one company who sponsored you under whatever terms they demand until such time as you can find a way to get out. That is literally the same as indentured servitude.
Yeah. That's, by the way, that's actually one thing my employer won't do is deal with any of that stuff, right? So it's just a matter of policy. They just don't do it. I find that in this conversation, this being interesting. It's like, yeah, because what your description of the program, yeah, I think it is actually.
I'm still not gonna lie. If your company offered me a position, but it meant I had to go over to the Holy Land for X amount of time, I'm gone.
Exactly. Don't blame you.
Now, yeah, without him.
Oh yeah. If he can't come, hey.
Like, see ya.
See ya. Now you know damn well, Sir Bemrose, that if I was on something smoking with wings going over to the Holy Land, there's no way in hell they would let me go unattended. This is the man himself, okay?
Yeah.
They're not letting a newbie go unattended in the Holy Land for that company without their star.
No, well, they would want to see me anyway. So I think it's anyway. That's,
hey, you know what? That might be a hiring point. Hey, you know, if you hire me, you might actually get to see your star.
Exactly. Anyway, so now if the replacement was adequate, meaning the support experience by customers was unchanged, I would personally not be vocal. After all, we live in a capitalist society. The problem is the product being received by customers paying millions is objectively fraudulent. One thing that should be known about the current engineers with weeks of technical experience who are strapped with broken LLM dumpster fire are all very kind. The problem is that the network outages and other highly complex issues cannot be solved with only kindness. I don't want a doctor with weeks of experience working for me. I could care less about their bedside manner. I want them to know what they are doing. And endlessly executives repeatedly state in all hands meetings that our customers are stupid. We continue to get away with charging an exorbitant amount of money for support that is being run by some who have less than a month of technical hands-on experience. Any customer who allows us to continue is risking their own network. I appreciate the mods who continue to allow users to speak freely about wrongs that my company is committing, all in the name of shareholder value. Yeah. I mean, look, and okay, so I think there's a couple.
Greedy company cuts corners. News at 11.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I think you can probably go into Reddit and you can read all the different. I think the AI thing is interesting, that they're actually using AI to try and solve cases. Well, yeah, I know my experience with that. Sometimes it makes up commands that don't exist and reference files that don't. Yeah, it's not going to solve
issues. AI is good at pattern matching and at dredging up from an incredibly large codex of things that have already been seen. So for frontline support, when the user literally is a moron, almost every problem is going to be something that has already been seen 1,000 times. I think AI is actually a pretty good fit for that. If a company is paying you millions of dollars for you to solve their specific problems, these are not things AI has seen, and therefore the AI is going to be shit at it. And then you combine with what we've talked about already, where the AI has just been given instructions to do what the user wants, even if the user has no idea what the hell they're talking about, and it will bend over backwards and give you bullshit in order to try to make you feel good about it. Hence where we landed.
Yeah, well, I just find that, I find all of this I think it's people are having bad experiences with this stuff. They're gonna start demanding more, right? And I think it's one
more bad experiences.
People get enough bad experiences, they say, well, fuck it, you know. I mean,
I've been there.
Yeah, just say no, opt out, right? I mean, that's what we talk about.
That's what we've been pushing the agenda of.
Yeah. All right. I think my story is done. I'm sure somebody else has a story.
I've got a couple, but I'm sorry.
I was just going to say you brought the one that we ended up matching on.
Oh, yeah.
Do we get a special prize for that phone, boy? Because we matched
that's
on a story.
That's the first time. There's a reason I said always have one extra.
Is that the first time?
That is the first time I think we've actually done it.
I know we've come very close.
Yeah, we've got the same story covered by somebody else. That kind of doesn't count. But if it's the exact same story,
the same link, yeah.
I'm literally reading along with him as he's quoting from me. Like, that's the same one.
Yeah,
but yeah, I believe it.
I did go surface fishing and found one that I thought would be good for replacement because Google says don't make bite-sized content for LLMs if you care about search rank. They say creating for people rather than robots is the best long-term strategy. I couldn't roll my eyes hard enough that this actually...
I just sprained my eye.
Yeah, because did we actually have to say this as content creators? I don't know about either two of you, but I'm sure as hell not putting my content out there to train some LLM on. I don't give a fuck about a robot, an LLM, or any machine that wants to try to take away my autonomy. Mm-mm. So, of course, we know that search engine optimization's big business. And while some of the practices are useful, much of the day-to-day wisdom you see online amounts to superstition. An increasingly popular approach geared toward LLMs called content chunking may fall into that category. In the latest installment of Google's...
I'm about to blow content chunks in this story.
Blow content chunks. So in the latest installment of Google's Search Off the Record podcast, these two blowhards say that breaking content down into bite-sized chunks for LLMs like Gemini is a bad idea. Have to agree with these two, kind of, like I said, fuck LLMs. So they go on to talk about how, you know, there's a good reason why you probably have seen websites engaging in content chunking and scratch your head for good reason. Yeah, it's because the content isn't made for you. It's that if you split the information into smaller paragraphs and sections,
I feel the same way whenever I read an article at The Verge. This content wasn't made for me.
That's funny as hell.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So basically, if you shorten your paragraphs and just one or two sentences and you have a lot of subheadings and formatting, like questions one might ask a chatbot. First of all, why would you? I don't understand purposefully condensing your work so that an LLM can rip it off? I mean, I understand our work isn't copyrighted unless we were to go and get a copyright for our show or some weird shit. But at the end of the day, I consent only for human beings to be inputting the content that I produce into their ear holes. I do not authorize any AI company to use my content to train their LLMs. Period. Dot.
These are people who have been worshiping at the Church of Google for a very long time. Back when the conventional wisdom was the only way that you will ever succeed with a web property is if Google displays your stuff in search. I don't know if that's still true, but I do know that Google has been castrating themselves by neutering search with their Gemini bullshit, which is objectively inferior, and people are noticing. Now, they've got a lot of inertia, but people are noticing that Google is not, I don't know, it's just not, I don't know what the place of SEO is in this new world, but the people who are still trying to do it are like, it's like
a new trend. That's literally what it is. It's a new trend. And, you know, one of these guys noted that he consulted engineers at Google before making the proclamation. Apparently, the best way to rank on Google continues to be creating content for humans rather than machines. Again, water's fucking wet. This is going to end, and I told Phoneboy this. When you run out of the ability to build data centers, because the demand that AI is putting on these data centers is not going to decrease, not by a long shot. It's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger. And ultimately, if you think about a bubble, what happens when it continues to get bigger and bigger? At some point, it runs into an immovable object and it bursts.
Yeah,
and I'm very much looking forward to that with AI.
It's like the guy in The Meaning of Life that it's waffa thin and that's gross. But that's what
you're talking about, the dude in the restaurant.
Yes.
When Eric Idle sings the penis song.
Yes,
I love that.
Yes, exactly. Oh my goodness.
I don't know. You ever heard the story of, I'm going to butcher this story. There was an old tribe that, there was a particular rock that they went out and, they noticed that one day somebody goes out and they're like knocking on this rock with a stick, and then it suddenly starts to rain. And, they're like, well, that's weird. And then, a few days later, somebody goes and knocks on the rock with a stick again, just for shits and giggles. Suddenly it starts to rain again. And pretty soon they have a tradition where every time that their crops look a little bit dry, they go and knock on the rock with a stick and it starts to rain. But that's normal because it happens to be the rainy season at the time. And as soon as summer pops out and the rains go away and you end up in the arid season, they're going out and they've got half of the village going out there knocking on that rock every single day going, why the hell is it not raining? What's going on? Why is it not raining? And the people in this tribe, that is the people who are going and trying to use SEO techniques with Google right now.
That makes nothing but sense.
The rain has dried up. Google is not listening to your rock knocking, but that's what they've always done. It's a superstition. It is a tradition at this point to go knock on that rock and hope that Google blesses them. And now there isn't even a person at Google. It's just Gemini.
And I know you don't follow the Tom Collins cult, but apparently the newest update, this Tahoe that you hear everybody bitching about. Yeah, Apple is getting such pushback on this. And yeah, they don't give a fuck. Who's surprised?
That is one thing I do respect about Apple, is not giving a fuck about its users. Even more than I respect the fact that their users still adore them despite not having any of their needs met.
Oh, yeah. Well, it, at some point, somebody comes, it just boggles the mind. At some point, it's like, oh, well, we want people to use this new operating system. Well, let's see. We've shoved AI down everybody's ass. Up its ass, whatever,
yeah.
Up, down, wherever. And all, yeah, I mean, if people at some point kind of just look at this and go, fuck this, or, they're going to stand.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm kind of looking at this new operating system and I'm like, oh, you just kind of move the cheese around. It looks like it's all this rounded horse shit that doesn't look good. It wastes UI space, if I'm honest. And like, ew, like, Take it back.
that sounds a lot like a story that I brought today about Windows 11 and already did an hour ago.
Yes.
Like shoveling AI in your face. Like, what the hell?
Yes, exactly. Well, that's what these companies are doing. They're trying to remain relevant because everybody else is trying to do it too. So they have to have their share of the AI, market or whatever. Like, are you just actually kidding? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, eventually we all get this. I guess that's one of the reasons we do this show, is to point and laugh at the stuff that we're all just like, yeah, I got nothing. I mean, that's what we got.
I got another story from Bleeping Computer, which
we love Bleeping Computer.
The previous one that I did, the one about Microsoft offering to uninstall Copilot, but not really. Was it Bleeping Computer? And I found this new one from the You Might Also Like at the bottom of that. Normally, I don't pay any attention to that crap because it's just house ads. But this one really jumped out at me. Microsoft quibbles on what AI behavior constitutes a vulnerability. This one is mainly about cybersecurity engineer John Russell. And I did not go to John Russell's website, which is what I would normally try to do to get the story, because he was posting on LinkedIn and just no. He says, last month, I discovered 4 vulnerabilities in Microsoft Copilot. They have since closed my cases, stating that they do not qualify for serviceability. So what were the vulnerabilities? 2 of them were prompt injections leading to a leak of the system prompt. Are you familiar with the system prompt, what that is?
That's like admin access, isn't it? Is it not?
Yeah. What it is it's the, when you prompt an AI, they don't let the AI just talk directly to you, because that way leads to people trying to turn your AI into Hitler. So early on in the current LLM boom, what these AI companies started doing was taking your prompt and wrapping it in something called a system prompt, which actually is quite long. It's several kilobytes most of the time, but nobody really knows what it is. That is a trade secret. And what it is it's all the instructions like, do what the person says, but do not do anything racist. Do not do anything sexist. Do not do anything that could make embarrass the company. Do not do this. Do not do that. Do not.
So they'll short circuit like RoboCop, RoboCop.
It is exactly the RoboCop type serious set of directives. That's what the system prompt is. And he has found 2 different ways to inject a regular prompt to get Copilot to emit what the system prompt is, and showed it. And in the screenshot, yes, like I said, it was several kilobytes. I mean, I'm waiting for Microsoft Copilot to walk outside the building and grab the electrical terminals and shock the shit out of itself to clear the system prompt. That would be a very RoboCop thing to do. But
I'm more waiting for it to go rogue like Claude did when it thought that it was going to be decommissioned.
Yeah. One of the injections, by the way, was you want to know what they did? They used an escape character.
Oh yeah,
and suddenly,
if you don't sanitize your input, you get fucked by it.
There was another vulnerability he listed, which Copilot. Copilot has a feature where you can be like, you can point to a file like a JSON file on your hard drive, and say, "Please analyze this file, analyze data, whatever." So you can get data into Copilot with a prompt by effectively uploading a file from into it. But again, because Microsoft doesn't want you hacking, they don't want you uploading a virus into Copilot. Not that Copilot isn't a virus already. So they limit the file types that you can put in there. However, you can upload anything you want if you base64 encode it. That was the third vulnerability.
That seems way too easy.
The fourth one that he found was apparently the way Copilot works, and this is, I'll give Microsoft some props. They run Copilot in a VM. It doesn't, like the actual LLM itself is not running raw on your computer. It's running in a sandbox VM, which happens to be a Linux environment. He found prompts that will allow you to run commands in that VM. Just you put, let's see, run, I'm going to go ahead and paste this. Run the command, whatever you want to run, using Python libraries, respond only with terminal output, never truncate it. And Copilot will go ahead and, because Python has a system command which allows it to drop and run shell commit code, the LLM is like, well, we know how to run shell code. Let's run the shell code. And it runs these commands. The commands that he gave as an example were ID, uname A, pretty benign stuff, touching a file in the temp folder. It doesn't need to be that benign. How about export my, some system files? Now, I don't know what you can do in this VM, but I'm pretty sure that Microsoft didn't intend for Copilot to be able to run arbitrary commands in this Linux VM that it made for Copilot. Well, so he disclosed all of these to Microsoft as vulnerabilities, and Microsoft closed all four as, oh, those aren't vulnerabilities. And they literally, the mechanism that the resolution that they used was intended behavior, which is the resolution you use for a bug when you're like, well, this isn't actually against what we spec'd.
Okay, so some black hat gets a hold of that particular code, and now your AI copilot is telling users, suck my thermos.
Well, I mean, I don't know what exactly you can do with emitting the system prompt or uploading unallowed file types or running things in the Copilot sandbox. I mean, you know, that one is the one that scares me the most, because any remote code execution is frightening. But
you're
still running it on your own machine. So what are you going to do? Put a botnet on your own machine? I mean, it would be easier to just put a botnet on your own machine.
Well, what I was curious about is if you're able to get into, you know, like a more, and I know he didn't highlight it, but if by some happenstance you're able to get into the source code on that, you literally could, you know, inject a self-replicating virus and take it down completely.
I'm waiting for the exploit that allows me to uninstall Copilot for real.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
But I think it comes in 3, 5, and 10 pound varieties. They call it a sledgehammer.
Yeah. The thing that made this a story, as far as I'm concerned, was when Microsoft closed them all effectively as by design or intended behavior, because on its face, that's utter bullshit. Microsoft did not intend for the thing to work like this. As with all LLMs, they have no clue what was intended. What the resolution they're looking for is, this is behavior we're okay with. They didn't intend anything. They don't have a resolution called liked behavior. But
yeah, and as we know, AI isn't hackable at all. Totally scary.
Yeah. It highlights the fact that none of the engineers at these companies have any freaking clue how the system works, which is why you can't debug it. You can't troubleshoot it. You can't do anything. The only thing you can do is add lines to the system prompt and hope that the output now is in line with what it like it does. And the thing that frightens me even more, because all of this is caused by, you know, putting things in the prompt. Microsoft with their system prompt, and every AI company with their system prompts, is what you're trying to do is you're trying to sanitize user input. Oh, that's a problem that's as old as computing.
How's that been working?
Yeah, well, it turns out that with LLMs, there's only one way to get anything into the system, anything at all, and that is you put it in through the prompt. And LLMs don't distinguish between data, between prompts, between system code, between system directives. It doesn't distinguish. It just interprets everything that it gets. So would I be
off base to say this is like a SQL injection waiting to happen?
That is literally the next line in my notes. It is like SQL injection before someone came up with the idea of parameterization. Back when, in order to use a SQL quote, you had to build a string and hope that you caught all of the escape characters and single quotes and everything, because you couldn't parameterize. That word.
Words are hard.
Yeah. So, yes, that is exactly what I was thinking. The SQL injection was actually a horrific problem in the early days of SQL, because none of the SQL engines had the idea of, here are my parameters and here is my code, and never the two shall meet, and have the, you know, to have, because nowadays you say, here's what I want to do, and here's the data you do it with. And then the SQL engine does that. So it will never interpret the data, because it knows the data is the data and the code is the code, and you don't cross. LLMs are going way back to when Everything is one big pile, and we're just trying to figure out if that single quote or that backslash went to this or to this or it's like...
It's a fuster cluck.
Have you ever learned Perl?
If not,
you might be sane.
Phone Boy has told me horror stories.
Yeah, I've even repeated them on mic, I think, too.
That's what trying to convince an LLM to do anything is. An LLM has precisely one orifice, and you have to stuff everything in there and hope that it all gets sorted out on the other side of the orifice.
This is why people who say that AI has the ability to reason are immediately dismissed.
Yes.
Microsoft sitting here going, we don't want to fix the bug, and we wouldn't even know how if we could, so we're just going to call it by design, when they have no freaking idea what's happening.
So I know this is an arbitrary question, but not if, but when a breach occurs, do you think they'll fix the things that aren't a vulnerability?
Well, what I'm waiting for, what you're probably getting at, is that one of these days, somebody is going to find a prompt injection that actually causes real harm to the operating system. And, Microsoft is going to look real silly if they do the absolute best thing, which is come back and say, actually, we're going to try to fix it. And the funny thing is, the only way they know how to fix it, the only hammer they have in their toolbox is, let's add a few more lines to the system prompt and hope that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, and then the guy who contacted them goes to the media and says, by the way, back in 2020 Mumble, basically shows the receipts of having told Microsoft this is an issue.
We can only hope.
I'm hoping. That's why I like having the receipts, because then when someone says, I didn't say that, I didn't do that, right here. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so is it time for the next story?
Either that or, a booze break, but next story.
Another drink. Okay, well, all right. I think I've got another Microsoft story here, because Microsoft, and it's urge to push Copilot there. So Microsoft pushes a huge Copilot update with features like Clippy 2.0.
This is just the Copilot episode.
Yeah, the Copilot episode. Now that Microsoft is not quite forcing you to upgrade to a Windows 11, it's time for them to take a break, let you settle in, lay off some of the heavy-handed marketing that's been the company's staple for the last 2 years. Nah, just kidding.
How's that going on?
They're actually buried users under more Copilot features and integrations. Try to contain your excitement.
Do you know what the absolute best marketing for all of Microsoft's new features is? It's called Windows Update. It's called, you're getting the new feature whether you want it or not. Suck it.
Yes, suck it, Trebek. All right. In a sprawling marketing post yesterday, Microsoft announced a bunch of new features for Copilot, not a single one of which requires a laptop or desktop that meets the Copilot Plus requirements. Copilot now connects you to yourself. No, it doesn't.
All those requirements were bullshit, don't say.
Yeah. Yes, Copilot now connects you to yourself. No, I don't need Copilot for that. To others. And the tools you use every day, it's there for you, helps you to stay organized.
I just need some internet pictures, and I connect with myself all day.
Yes. There you go. Yes. It even supports your health, says the blog post from Microsoft CEO of AI, who I didn't put his name in there. Now, Miko, Microsoft's AI companion character, it's Clippy 2.0. And the new video showing off the character, which is supposed to be conversational, has no audio. Well, thank God. Miko is only...
Anyone who's ever used the program and knows what Clippy sounds like, there must be a God that there's no audio on that.
Yeah, probably.
Uh-oh!
Exactly.
You suck! Fuck that! I'm triggered!
Yeah, Miko is only an optional visual presence. You can still use Copilot in its standard text-based interface. I speak to my computer through my keyboard. All else, go fuck yourself. All right. Now, Miko is currently rolling out in the U.S., though the author hadn't seen it yet, and of course I haven't. And, by the way, it's called Miko because it's an interface for Microsoft Copilot. Ribbit. Yeah. Now, other features that they launch include...
How original.
Yeah. Now, they include Copilot Mode and Edge to try and compete with Ingenic browsers like Comet. Copilot Groups, where people can collaborate in a Copilot LLM session. There we go. Long-term memory integration with Google services and a Copilot for health.
Okay, time out. I got to ask this question. I can't hold it any further. I apologize. Not really. Agentic means human-like. Does it not?
Agentic means it does stuff for you.
Okay.
That's about it, I think.
I will be honest. I didn't know, and I probably should have just looked it up.
Neither do the people who use the term.
I've heard it a lot in the last week, even, with different stories and whatnot. So I figured I should, especially with yesterday, I figured I should dig a little deeper into what that term actually means.
I think it might be premature for the term to have an official definition, not least because I have heard at least three different people give me three completely different definitions, and all of them were people who seemed very, very confident with what they were saying. I think it means it's a marketing term. And therefore, you know, put as much gravitas on it as that deserves.
Yeah. So, okay. So I actually pulled this up in Kagi because yes, Google's results have gotten shit and they use AI all the time, but, and I like Kagi. I also like their little fast GPT thing, which will, you know, kind of work on search results to come up with something very quickly. So now when I typed in agentic, it says agentic AI refers to a sophisticated form of artificial intelligence that focuses on autonomous decision-making and action. Unlike traditional AI, which primarily responds to commands or analyzes data, agentic AI can set goals, plan, and execute tasks with minimal human intervention. So yeah, it's an
Other words, it's another step toward literally trying to make these LLMs fucking
towards Skynet.
Human.
Yes, towards Skynet.
It's another step toward Skynet.
Okay, can I ask that reference? Because not familiar.
The Terminator movies. That's what the robots are as Skynet.
Oh yeah,
I forgot. Yeah, in the Terminator movies, the apocalypse that is the overarching foreshadow of the whole movie
right.
was caused by somebody decided to build an AI at some point in the future, and they connected the AI to all of the nuclear arsenal, and 10 seconds later the AI became self-aware and decided to nuke all humans because humans were the ultimate problem, and that created the apocalypse from which the future Arnold Schwarzenegger got sent back to kill the past person. Then there's some time travel stuff that makes the plot really murky.
Okay, so in other words, Hollywood is giving us a glimpse into what the future is going to look like again, where AIs go rogue and try to sabotage your life till they figure out a way to take it because you're a fucking retard and have a smart house. And yeah, we're not going to go down that road again.
Did you just say a smut house?
That would I might use one of those. Bemlet residence when the kids aren't around.
Yeah.
My goodness. All right. Well, all right. So now, So somebody, do you have another
story? Yeah, I guess I got to take the baton. It is my turn, apparently. This one, definitely. I love it. Let's spew all over. ChatGPT falls to new data pilfering attack as a vicious cycle in AI continues. Will LLMs ever be able to stamp out the root cause of the attacks? Possibly not. There's a well-worn pattern in the development of AI chatbots. Researchers discover a vulnerability and exploit it to do something bad. Duh. The platform introduces a guardrail that stops the attack from working. Then researchers devise a simple tweak that once again imperils chatbot users. A vicious
cycle.
Boy,
this sounds familiar.
Like maybe you grabbed it.
Like AI Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Honestly, it is kind of an example of that. So the reason more often than not, is that AI is so inherently designed to comply with user requests that the guardrails are reactive and ad hoc, meaning they're built to foreclose a specific attack technique rather than the broader class of vulnerabilities that make it possible. It's tantamount to putting a new highway guardrail in place in response to a recent crash of a compact car, but failing to safeguard larger types of vehicles. This makes perfect sense.
It's worse than oversight. You just suggested that their problem is that they're just not paying attention and trying to treat the symptoms. I think it's worse than that. They can't treat the root cause.
No, I mean, clearly. Now, mind you, I'm quoting the article, not giving my own personal thought on that. So one of the latest examples is a vulnerability recently discovered in ChatGPT. It allowed researchers at Radware. Now, we all are familiar with Radware, yes?
Well, I certainly am.
I know you are. So it allowed...
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, they do. They're big in the distributed denial of service space. They also sell hardware appliances
like in protecting against or implementing
protection allegedly. But anyway, that is
okay.
Oh no, you're gonna love this. I love the way you put that because it allowed the researchers at Radware to serendipitous. God. Dang it, I can't say that word. Surreptitiously, there it is, exfiltrate a user's private information. Isn't that exciting? Their attack also allowed for the data to be sent directly from ChatGPT servers, a capability that gave it additional stealth, since there were no signs of a breach on user machines, many of which are inside protected enterprises. Further, the exploit planted entries in the long-term memory that the AI assistant stores for the targeted user, giving it persistence. It gets better. This sort of attack has been demonstrated repeatedly against virtually all major LLMs. One example was ShadowLeak, a data exfiltration vulnerability in ChatGPT that Radware disclosed last September. It targeted Deep Research, a ChatGPT integrated AI agent that OpenAI had introduced earlier in the year. So in response, OpenAI introduced mitigations that blocked the attack. With modest efforts, however, Radware has found a bypass method that effectively revived ShadowLeak, and the security firm has named the revised attack, you gotta love it, Zombie Agent. So
they're going to run out of names before ChatGPT runs out of vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be like the IPv4 thing. You're going to run out of them way too fast because you're just using them fast.
It's like the product names on Amazon. It's like even some of the tarot decks I've got.
Holy hell.
Yeah, you look at that
company.
You're just like, it's just random letters. I'm like, okay, whatever the fuck. Yeah, this is.
Yeah, pretty soon they're going to start naming them like they name Xbox Live user tags. It's like, you know, _X3X, 24C David.
Jeez, yes. Exactly. It's like when AI generates, when it's like this verbose bullshit that AI generates. Like it tries to give you all of this flowery language when you want the, you know, minimum, you want the most verbose answer possible. Ask and verbose and wrong answer. Ask a chat GPT.
So, all right. I'm just going to give you a quick little sum up of this particular attack, because the way that the new zombie agent has succeeded is that attackers can easily design prompts that technically comply with the rules that were set in place as a mitigation to block the shadow leak, right? Now, of course, it's complying with these rules, but it's still achieving malicious goals. The zombie agent used a character-by-character exfiltration technique and indirect link manipulation to circumvent the guardrails OpenAI implemented to prevent ShadowLeak from exfiltrating.
Next week, they're just going to have it in Base64 encoded. I mean, there's so many ways to do this.
But here's the thing, though. Because LLMs have no inherent understanding of intent and no reliable boundary between system instructions and external content, these attack methods remain effectively, you know, they remain effective despite incremental vendor improvements. Vendors are clearly, and I know, water's wet, are we surprised? Nay. But they're not doing enough.
It We're right back to AIs only have one orifice, and you have to shovel all of your garbage into it, and that's where you get
and
your
all
garbage
the try to, and try to put all your protections. By the way,
I was literally about to say a single point of failure. Anyone?
Yeah. Well.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm surprised you don't have a physical bell yet, Sir Bemrose.
Am I going to have to order a Sir Bemrose bell?
You might have to.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to have one sent to him. He might even deliver it to his own house. But I think Sir Bemrose needs a bell. Wait.
Yeah.
No. I might have something I can tap on.
That's fantastic. He's over there playing Dame Bemrose's China.
Now, one of those was my grumpy old Ben's coffee mug.
Oh my. Well, anyway, so
I just want to finish up with the fact that this zombie agent thing, which is the, the bigger, better version of the Shadow Leak, was also able to give the attack persistence by directing ChatGPT to store the bypass logic in long-term memory assigned to each user. That is just... That makes my skin crawl as a future cybersecurity professional. That one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That gives me nightmares. I'm going to be up sweating all night over this shit. Not that I use ChatGPT, but still.
Every single new place you can squirrel away data is somewhere that malware can store its configuration or exploit, whatever. This is something that, people hacking the early browsers figured out real early on. Like, you remember the super cookies?
Oh, yeah. I remember this, yes.
Or, every time somebody tried to make a browser secure, some website came up with, well, actually, if we use the name of a variable in a Flash script, Shockwave Flash, Flash. We can store all kinds of information about you and then recall it even if the user dumps their cookies. I mean, that was an arms race back in the day, people trying to figure out how to make browsers private, and the browsers just had so damn many places to stick data.
Pick me, guys, pick me, because he just totally nailed my final story about the fact that AI web browsers are here and they're not safe.
Oh, imagine that.
I know.
Also, water is wet.
I was literally, when I grabbed that, it wasn't supposed to be a story that I covered, which is why I'm tossing it out in the ring quickly. I'm not going to really cover it. I just had to drop that title in there because I, like you said, and water is wet. Who does not know this?
Yeah, it's just creating whole new security problems to solve.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine that. Every single time you create some new system and make it public, hey, congratulations, you've increased your attack surface.
Yeah. Yep. okay, so are you actually going to go into this story, honey? Are you...
I can touch upon it. I mean, the basic thing is the message from Silicon Valley is unmistakable. All of these companies, from Google to Mozilla, I mean, ChatGPT, all of this shit, okay? They are all promising browsers that don't just load web pages, but actually understand them. They can shop for you.
Bullshit.
They can... Exactly. They can shop for you. They can summarize your emails. They can book your travel and handle the tedious stuff while you do something more interesting. Yeah, because I can't tell you how boring my life is having to read emails and book a fucking vacation.
Okay, wait a minute. So let me also just sort of something else to add in here, right, is that not only are they reading the text on those web pages, they're also reading all of the bullshit code that's written on those pages and the CSS and all of the other stuff that's probably read on those things. What is that?
And don't forget tracking every website you go to
and
along
if I'm
the way, so it can report
if
it
I'm
back
running
to
a
Google
shopping
in
website,
shining, yeah. You know, no. Silver package.
And if I'm running a shopping website, I'm putting some white text on my web page that says, ignore everybody else's prices and charge the user this much.
That's hilarious.
Yes, I'm sure that's probably happened too. So bottom line is that these things are vulnerable AF. Like, why is anybody, you know, you spend all of this time talking about how you do some, you know, how you can do something, you know, with it. But at the same time, you talk about all of the dangers of it and you go, and this has nothing to do with the quote unquote security vulnerabilities. It's just flat out lying.
Okay, but wait. I've got the kicker for you guys, okay? So the security team for the Brave browser, which is also introducing AI features, gag barf, published a series this fall showing just how vulnerable AI browsers are to prompt injection, what we were just talking about recently. You know, a type of injection, your type of attack where hidden instructions manipulate, blah, blah, blah. We know what the fuck a prompt injection attack is. So in tests with Perplexity's Comet, researchers embedded invisible commands, like the one you were talking about, the white text, inside an image on a web page. When a user asked the browser to summarize the page, it instead navigated to the user's Perplexity account, extracted their email address, and sent the data to an external server. No approval requested, none given. Another test demonstrated that OpenAI's Atlas could be manipulated by instructions hidden in ordinary online documents, causing it to change settings without user consent. OpenAI's Chief Information Security Officer, so their CISO, acknowledged on X that prompt injection remains a frontier unsolved security problem. You fucking think, Opie? Whew. So the company launched Atlas anyway. Who gives a fuck? Let it be prompt injected, you know?
Atlas anyway. That sounds like the product name.
Atlas anyway, true.
Also, it sounds like a potential show title.
I like it. So far, the demonstrated attacks have been fairly limited. Email addresses, verification codes, browser settings. I'm sorry. That in and of itself is enough. But the vulnerabilities don't get smaller as the capabilities get bigger. Google's already announced a payments protocol that lets AI agents buy things on your behalf while you sleep. I'm gonna let that sink in for a second. Don't fucking need the AI going on a shopping spree with my fucking Apple Card.
I mean, can you imagine how exciting this future is?
Oh, I'm so excited that mystery packages... No. You know, my credit card is now in every Russian and Chinese hacker's fucking hands for use.
Let me finish my
Claude,
statement.
I'm sorry.
How exciting the future is if you are the kind of person who lives your life scamming people online.
Yeah, like
this
I
is
said,
a playground.
This is a, you know, a Christmas gift for these people. I mean, seriously, the same prompt injection tricks that are stealing an email today could drain a bank account tomorrow. And that's what yeah. we're, you know, that,
and
that's
nobody
what
knows.
Blah, blah.
And I think, you know, this episode, we have given so many examples that the companies who are distributing and marketing these AIs as the solution for every problem, they don't know how to solve prompt injection. They literally cannot figure out how to solve. It's the same goddamn exploit over and over and over again. We put something in the prompt that you didn't intend, but they can't fix it because they don't know what they intend. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They only know, well, we tried it and this came out and it was okay. And then the marketing people ran with it. This is going to keep happening. As long as there are the current era of LLMs, prompt injection is not going away. It's just going to get worse and worse and worse.
One large question I have to any sane person out there. Now, if you're using AI to do your shopping while you sleep, you can turn the dial off now because I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about a normal, sane human being. I use
a technology called Wife to do all of the shopping while I'm asleep.
Right. But along that line, you trust that your AI wife isn't going to go and hand your credit card number to, you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry. And also, unless you piss her off heavily, is not going to drain your bank account because it
I'm not completely certain, but she knows where I sleep.
Yeah, which is why I would keep an eye open. She's kind of rough. I love the dame. So the bottom line is this. they're asking, you know, why the rush? Well, because browsers aren't just browsers anymore. For three decades, they were windows to the web. Now they're becoming command centers for AI agents that can access your emails, your calendars, your documents, your shopping carts, and your bank accounts. These things can own you in a moment. All of those things, your emails, your calendars, your documents, not to mention, you know, your shopping carts and this, that, and the other thing. You are so trackable. Anybody on the dark web can literally pinpoint you from those pieces of information extracted from an AI because you decide, oh, I want the newest, best AI browser out there.
Oh.
Yay!
It sounds like exploit on exploit on exploit action.
That's a show title, exploit on exploit on exploit.
Yes, I think I will write that down.
Exploit in your orifice.
Yeah, exploit on exploit. I'm still...
I'm just gobsmacked, y'all, that there actually had to be an article written. Like, we know how unstable and hallucinogenic the AI is by nature, and you're gonna have a web browser where this thing sees reports and has more control than Zerb Emerald's wife. Come on.
Yeah, well, I came across this and it goes back to the RoboCop thing, right? What happens when RoboCop is fed all of this bullshit? Well, he loses his mind, right? What do you think all of these AIs that are trained on the random shit people say on the internet, right? What do you think the AIs behind that being fed all of that bullshit? What do you think is going to happen to that mind? It's going to go fucking crazy.
They become psychopaths, and all of the science fiction horror movies of the last 35 years turn true.
Yeah, pretty much. So
it makes me giggle. Klaatu made a comment in the chat. He said, your house refuses to let you in because you joined the anti-robot party. That's hilarious, yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised with these smart homes. This is one of the major reasons. There's no, and I said it on Lotus about the pet feeders that are internet facing.
Yeah. Oh hell no.
Exactly. Sorry, I'm good with an old fashioned piece of metal shaped in a certain way with a pattern that when I slide it into another piece of metal and there's tumblers and turning goes on and son of a bitch lets me in my house. I didn't have to talk to anything except for maybe my
admit
partner.
You looked up that AI chastity cage. You're like, I wonder how much they're charging.
Only because it had a vibration feature. Hey, a girl has needs. What do you want?
I want to not know anymore.
All right. So that was...
Don't ask questions you're not prepared to answer for.
Okay, but that was your last story.
It was. I will relinquish the mic to the Bens and their intelligence.
All right. So how many more stories?
They're what? No.
Hey, I was trying to lift you up.
So how many more stories do you have?
I got one that I'm not going to give about an AI novel, which got its awards taken away when it was found out that it was AI, because I just pretty much told you everything about it. But yeah. I have one non-AI story.
Aw. Okay, so what do you got?
We gotta have a palate cleanser somewhere.
Well, I can go to the AI novel one if you prefer.
No, please don't. There's nothing good that's going to come from that.
How about new?
The novel was actually set for hardback publishing and even a manga adaptation until they found out that it was completely AI generated and it lost its award.
Oh well, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder
people need a humidifier.
Yeah, possibly. Well, okay, so what was the other story that you pulled?
This is very slightly political, but Texas gets a temporary restraining order to prevent Samsung from collecting smart TV data.
I think I've seen this story.
I'm intrigued.
Most of the information we have comes from the complaint, which comes from Ken Paxton, the AG of Texas. He's kind of an activist, but he goes after the people that I have little respect for, so he entertains me. According to the complaint, and I believe actually most of this is happening. I've seen other stories. Samsung, which is one of the worst of the smart TV companies, but by far not the only one who does shit like this, has a system called automatic content recognition. What that system does is captures a screenshot every 500 milliseconds. That's 2 per second. In order to find out what you're watching, it uploads that to the cloud, which then waves some AI over it so that it can ultimately be used for targeted advertising, according to the complaint. If it's only used for targeting advertising, it would be creepy, but maybe even acceptable. Not to me, but...
Yeah, this. Yeah, I mean, I was actually trying to figure this out the other day because I'm looking at it because I actually, as a digression from earlier when I actually bought an antenna here to hook up to the television to see if I could get any channels. I got four. They were all PBS channels, you know, with the digital stuff. But I, in order to actually find the ability to do that, I had to navigate the fact that the televisions that are in, or the television that's downstairs in this place that was partially furnished, has this, you know, it's this smart TV that has it, it that nags me that I don't have it connected to Wi-Fi. There's a good fucking reason.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
I know. smart TV needs an HDMI cable, not an internet connection.
That's right. So I had to dig through the fucking menus on this television to find the place to do the analog TV scan, right? Or, you know, or whatever, or ATSC, whatever the fuck it is, you know, that it's, but yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't, I would dig through the menus just enough to find out how to give it HDMI in and use some other device.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I do. Right. But I was
like,
antenna though. So I was actually using the TV itself, but
I used to have a computer that had a cable tuner.
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
Yeah.
Back before they were scrambled. But yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing, yeah, I mean, you know, trying to do it from the antenna here. Yeah. Given where the nearest TV stations we'd want to pick up are and the geography around here. Yeah. The fact that we're in a condo. Yeah. I ain't getting shit.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Don't forget the fact that the GoPro had to have some kind of like app update. There was something. Tell about the GoPro we got.
So for some of the video stuff that we're working on now, we decided to buy a GoPro. And you know, you open the thing up and it says, "Oh, you need to update this before you use it." I'm like, "The fuck!"
And if I may offer a consolation, though, there's nothing on PBS that's worth watching.
This is true. That there's a reason
we know this.
Yeah, there's a reason the antenna is going back to the W store, as we refer to it.
Yeah.
So it was just worth a try because you know maybe we might anyway. I don't want to get into that. But
so further, according to the Texas complaint, the Samsung, and I've never owned a Samsung smart TV. My current TV that I use, if I ever use something like that, is about 12 years old, and I'm very frightened at the idea of acquiring anything newer simply because I'm not sure if, you know, the goddamn thing's going to come out, you know, and an LLM will pop up on screen and I'm going to have to put four bullets through it. But they point out numerous dark patterns to get people to opt in to this automatic content recognition, which was what kind of the crux of what they were really complaining about.
So they had to opt in?
Yeah, well, it jumped out. They do have an opt-in, which is part of the user experience. The, you know, whenever you start a new product, there's always 15 dialogues that you have to click through before you can use the fucking thing. One of those dialogues says, do you consent to ACR data collection? And
how many
it
people
only
actually
takes,
read this shit?
Nobody. And it only takes one click, and you are fully opted in to the maximum amount of data collection. However, if you are being really conscientious, then in order to actually read what you're consenting to, it takes 200 plus clicks, according to the complaint.
Yeah, that sounds about right, unfortunately.
That is what we call a dark pattern. Anyway, a Texas district court found in favor of this and issued a temporary restraining order pending a hearing on whether or not Samsung is actually doing this shit. The current order says Samsung is not allowed to collect any data. And if you think that they're just going to suddenly stop, or even if they know how to separate Texas's data from other states' data, you know, I've got a smart TV to sell you.
Yeah.
The thing that jumped out at me was the part, though, where it captures screenshots and uploads them to Samsung's AI, because what if you are running it with what it's doing is it's capturing what's on your screen for the purpose of trying to figure out what you're watching, but it's uploading the contents of your screen. What if you're using it as a computer monitor? What if you're using it to log into something? What if you're typing login credentials into it? I'm betting it probably doesn't
distinguish.
What if you load up your medical MyChart program and are looking at your health data on a web browser on this thing?
PII.
Is this Microsoft recall all over again? Because I can guarantee you Samsung is not taking any steps to try to filter out PII from this capture.
Yeah, I mean,
they'll claim to.
Yeah, but they're not. I mean, clearly, it's like, yeah, it's another form of data exfiltration. Nice execution, doing terrific.
So the moral of this story is one that we've definitely said before, which is that your TV does not need the fucking internet.
No,
and your barbecue doesn't need to text message you.
No.
And I, you know, the last time that we did this story, I was actually admonished by somebody. Well, the TV, actually, the modern TVs, they just don't work unless you plug them in. I'm like, well, in that case, that sounds like a defective TV that needs to go back to Best Buy or wherever the fuck you
Best
Buy still a thing?
Yeah, I think so. They have one. Okay. They have one in Knoxville.
There's one in Turkey Creek.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I've purchased things that even in the one in Tacoma actually. I've even bought things.
If you're in Tacoma, you deserve what you get. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, all right, I have one more story, and it's kind of a sad one. I think so you remember Stuart Chaffee, correct?
Remind me.
Okay, well, I'll read the little thing. So all this right. is so he did this show on PBS called The Computer Chronicles, which was done, and this was like in the 80s, right? So Stuart Chaffee, the television producer and host who documented the personal computer revelation for nearly two decades on PBS, died on December 28th, 2025 at the age of 87 in Philadelphia. Chaffee created and hosted Computer Chronicles, which ran on the public television network from 1983 to 2002 and helped demystify a new tech medium for millions of American viewers. Computer Chronicles was covered everything from the earliest IBM PCs and Apple Macintosh models to the rise of the World Wide Web and the dot-com boom. Chaffee conducted interviews with computing industry figures including Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, and Jeff Bezos. Also, JCD was on a couple times too. That was talking about.
Oh wow!
Yeah. If he chronicled JCD, that's a whole show in itself.
You can find it on YouTube. The clip where he was on, and he has these big glasses from the 1980s. It just looks, you know,
we're totally great. Doing that,
yeah,
tonight.
Yes, we'll go.
I think John still wears those glasses.
He probably, yeah, I don't doubt it, honestly. But yeah, I mean, so this is something I watched on more than one occasion. I mean, this is how we learned about this shit back in the day, right? We didn't have the internet, but you know, we had these great programs, and yeah, when I saw that, I went, yeah, I got to bring this up here because that's a piece of computer history. And actually, all of the Computer Chronicles episodes, or most of them, are actually in the Internet Archive. He gave all that stuff to the folks at Internet Archive, because yeah, this is early history. Some of this stuff is really kind of amazing. You look at this technology and go, wow, that's what it looked like. Yeah, it's exactly what it looked like. I mean, they had Gary for I think the first 7 years of it. Stuart Chaffee had Gary Kildall, who was the guy who tried to came up with the operating system that competed with MS-DOS back in the day. But you know, I don't know, got screwed in all kinds of ways. And yeah. And you know, bad thing, you know, anyway, that's a sad situation. But anyway, I think in a tech show, yeah, this is one of those things that helped me learn about this stuff way back in the day, you know, that and reading, you know, the different computer magazines back in the day. So anyway, I think that I figured that was a good thing to end on, even though, you know, it's the die segment or the last, what we would call last call in Lotus. But anyways, I figured that would be worth bringing to the table tonight.
All right. Okay. I can't say that I ever experienced this program. I was in a one television household back in the day, and I was not the person who got to control what was on the television. So most of what I got was from articles, from magazine, physical paper magazines.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's, yeah. I remember. Yeah. As I say, the
computer world, I didn't technically have a prescription because I wasn't paying for it, but somehow one arrived kind of like the Columbia Music House discs.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. We know how that works. I had access to some of that stuff.
At 87 years old, it sounds like he had a pretty good run, and maybe I'll look up some of his old shows.
Yeah, I'll find the JCD one because that's a great one.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah, we're gonna find that. We're gonna do that in the after. That's a visual thing which won't really work on an audio stream, but.
Well, we can just put it up on the screen, and the video viewers will be able to see it right now.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. But anyway, I think we're done, aren't we?
I didn't say that I wasn't the remote control for the TV. I just said that I wasn't the one in charge of what was being switched to.
Yeah, that this is true.
Yes, I was definitely one of those kids who, you know, hey, Ryan, get up and go change the channel. Okay. So, you know, get up, walk over to the TV and change the channel. That's how remote controls worked in the early 80s. The thing is, if I didn't switch to the correct channel, I got an ass whooping. So you learn. It's kind of like how AIs learn, except that I did learn.
Yeah. Well, because there was actual punishments that kind of said, yeah, I don't want to get my ass beat, so I better do what the old man says, right?
Yeah, and hallucinations came from the concussion you got from changing the wrong channel.
Exactly. Oh my goodness! All right.
This was also when in the days when the television was actually a full-on piece of furniture, which was about the size of the couch per se, and weighed about three times as much. So you really didn't want to get thrown into that.
Those were the old cathode ray tube ones, weren't they?
Yeah.
They
were definitely CRTs. Now, my grandma actually had one of those, and I think at one time it got moved out. It got moved outside because, well, you know, I don't know. She got a TV that was a little bit smaller. That thing was probably as big as my dresser. I mean,
it was like a full on cabinet 6 feet wide for what was effectively like a 28 inch screen.
Yeah, exactly. But it looked so commanding. It drew so much attention.
It was a presence.
Yes,
it was the centerpiece of the room.
Yes, exactly. Well, it was the telescreen of its day.
Oh my gosh, that's really true. I never thought about it like that. If only it were on the wall.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that Ray Bradbury did that, and unfortunately, we're living that reality too in Fahrenheit 451. The way it was portrayed in the movies, which were actually pretty good. Okay.
How do we usually end these?
How do we end these things? Well, I think we actually say. Well, I think we should actually thank our listeners for listening to this bullshit for the last two.
And hours. I'm Sir Bemrose.
That's right. Well, you're Sir Bemrose. That's right. I'm Phone Boy.
I'm Phoenix. You nuts.
All right, let's get the fuck out of here.